very special TV Dudes episode recorded April 13th, 2015, Daredevil. Oh my god.
Yeah.
Did you guys see it?
Yes.
Oh, okay, good, because we're recording right now, and we're going to discuss this.
Are we going to spoil everything?
Yes.
We are going to spoil everything.
Everything.
Anyone who is listening to this, fair warning, we're going to discuss the entire 13 episodes, first season of Daredevil on Netflix.
Yep, nothing is off limits. Mm-hmm. We're going to spoil things that happen in the penultimate and the ultimate episode. If you haven't watched all 13 episodes, trust me, go watch all 13 episodes and then come back and listen.
Yes.
Now, I will say that at the end of this podcast, or near the end, I will go ahead and make an extra special note about some Easter eggs, which maybe are fun for some people and other people might not want to know that. So you can kind of check that off.
We'll have a double secret spoiler.
I don't know. Maybe some people are a little weird about like going into the minutia of Easter eggs, but I totally want to discuss it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, me too, because there's some fun ones.
But let's get on with it.
Okay. So basically, this was great. This was the best superhero TV show we've seen. It's one of the best TV shows done this year.
It is one of the best. Oh my God. It just killed it.
I would say, even with the Marvel movies and superhero movies I like a lot of special effects and when it's done really well, and like the drama of what big themes are representing, you know, I'm into that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But nothing has been as gritty as this, which it's got elements of The Wire because of the whole social aspect of the city.
Yeah.
Elements of like The Raid and The Raid 2 with just fantastic
the action
ass kicking scenes.
Yeah.
The acting is great. The way it was shot was great. The directing is great.
The cinematography is gorgeous.
It makes Hell's Kitchen in New York City look awesome. It makes me want to move back there.
And by the way, making Hell's, Hell's Kitchen is not what it used to be in the 70s when Daredevil was created.
Yeah.
Now it's a hipster neighborhood.
Exactly.
But they explain that perfectly.
they use the Avengers to explain why Hell's Kitchen was the Hell's Kitchen. I thought that was genius.
Which is totally genius. It just made total sense, but it also kind of ties it in from this point of like, okay, all that superhero stuff, you know, that exists, but that's out there. But here in Hell's Kitchen, where because of, you know, it kind of just says like it's more gritty because it's here. Like, and I was thinking about the movie because, you don't see people actually die in the movie. Even though, like, if you read some of the newspaper headlines,
it's clearly hundreds have died
and all that stuff. And
in fact, if you look at,
go ahead.
It's an Easter egg thing. But if you look at one of Ben Urich's newspaper clippings that he wrote,
It
said hundreds died.
It was in the Battle of New York.
Which I thought was great. And it ties everything in for me. And I mean, I knew basic Daredevil history a little bit, but not a lot of it. But
I'm curious, did you know his powers? Did you know what his powers
were? Well, I knew it was something about that he had like basically heightened senses.
Did you know about the lie detection thing?
Well, it just made sense to me because of somebody who's that sensitive to being able to hear heartbeats and stuff.
Yeah.
That made sense. I mean, I didn't need it explained to me.
It's one of his big powers, and I love that. I think one of the big things this show did was to trust the intelligence of the audience.
Yeah.
They didn't do a big thing where they explained
show and not tell. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when he's figuring out people are lying, they zoom in. The sound design, we didn't even mention the sound design is amazing on this.
Yes, yes.
When they're zooming in on him listening to the heartbeat, and you can hear the heartbeat, and you're like, oh, okay, I get it. He can tell when someone's lying. They never come out and say it. Well, I guess they do in, like, episode 10 when he's talking to Foggy. But
yeah, the whole Foggy thing.
And Claire, I think.
Yeah.
But they basically let the viewers pick up on what's going on rather than sort of spelling it all out. And I thought that was really cool.
And I think that, again, for someone, I never read the comics, but I mean, I have a basic idea of who he is. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't shown in my face. I didn't have this huge, crazy backstory where it's like, do you take all the time to make sense of it? I love the way they kind of flash back to it and kind of do it incrementally throughout the series.
Yeah.
And because it's like you said, it's just like the cable shows.
Yeah.
It treats its audience like it's very intelligent.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of shows superhero show I would always wanted, you know?
Yeah. Well, another thing is, this is, you know, you talk about the movies doing different things. The movies are basically, the movies are movies.
Yeah.
They do big, epic, two-hour, you know, action pieces,
right.
You know? Taking a TV show means that they could take their time, they could tell their stories, they could give their bad guy a lot more. This is the best bad guy Marvel Cinematic has.
Oh, yeah.
Because they can flesh him out and let him be a character.
Well, you feel bad for him.
And I also thought that the easy thing to do, the easy slip up to make would have been to make it so slow that everybody's like, okay, get to the Daredevil stuff already.
Right.
And they started with an action sequence with him as Daredevil and then started and then went back.
Right.
And I thought that was really smart.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they start with the... How he becomes?
No, they no, no start, they start.
They
with
start
him.
With the car accident.
Well, start with Did the car they? Accident, okay, yeah. But then they went
but
straight
they
into
immediately
a,
to a into to an a action fight sequence.
Yeah.
Yes,
and then they jumped to him being, you know, a law student and all that, or you know, a lawyer.
Yeah, they
all
did
that.
All that because they were able to space it out, and they were able to do that in flashbacks. It wasn't like a whole flashback episode,
right.
But it tied into something that was in the present time. That,
yeah,
that made total sense for somebody that it wasn't like. What's the word I want to use? Like, it wasn't like just ramrodded down you, you know?
No.
Like, it wasn't hit over your head with it. It just was logically done, and I don't know, it was just seamless.
Yeah, the flashbacks were tied thematically to what was going on, whether it was back to his dad or Kingpin or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got 13 hours of this.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it was better than many of the Marvel films. I'll say that easily. And I might say most.
You know what's funny, Grant, is that you and I always come down a little differently on movie stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you like the darker, more realistic stuff, like the Batman stuff, more than the Marvel Cinematic, I think. Well, more than me.
Okay.
You like the Dark Knight stuff
I
more
really
than
like
I
like the Dark Knight stuff.
Right.
I wouldn't necessarily say more than... I don't know.
You like them more than I do. You do, yeah.
Well,
but what I think was amazing about this is that it managed to hit that sweet spot of it still feels like the Marvel Cinematic Superhero stuff to me, in large part because of Foggy and the comic relief there. But
Just being a character and that we are already familiar with.
But it's also serious and dark, like crime stuff, like what the Dark Knight stuff did with Batman.
But it's richer because. The fight scenes are better.
Oh man, the
he's
fight
a
scenes.
Superpowered superhero.
But you also see, but he also gets hurt. Like okay, a couple times you see Bruce Wayne or you know Batman or I should say Christopher Nolan's, he would get hurt in his.
Yeah.
But when he's actually like when him and Foggy have to confront each other.
Yeah.
And he's laying on a couch because basically they
he
had
looks
to stitch,
beat to shit.
Not only did he look beat to shit, but every time he went out after that, he always stumbled a little bit.
Yeah.
He always
he's
always a little wounded. He's like, oh, you know, he's like always wincing a little
bit. Yeah. We get a little flashback in episode 7, I believe, the Stick episode.
Yep.
Yeah.
Where he's being trained by Stick.
Right.
And it was later. It was later in the series where Stick says he's going to quit and leaves him, right?
Right.
And he's like, I'm not going to train you anymore.
That's all episode 7.
Oh, was it?
Yeah.
Because right before that, he said that their next thing they were going to train on was knife training.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
And boy, could he use it because he gets sliced up all the time through this. And it's like that one thing. Like, that's why you're getting cut all the time.
We're
you
also
don't have
noticing
proper knife training.
It didn't stay this way, but the first 3-4 episodes were all one day. Each one was a day.
Right. Mm.
And so he was getting more and more beat up. And we were like, are they going to do 13 episodes where by the end he is just wiped out?
It's just a corpse.
But I did like that big fight sequence, which we go ahead and talk about, the second episode fight sequence.
It was probably about like four or five takes.
By the way,
you can kind of see where
it was one take.
Yes, it was.
They Christos Gage, one of the writers on the show, posted an article.
Was it seriously?
It was one take. There are bits where they could have cheated it, but they didn't.
It totally looks like they cheated it.
It's a one take.
It looks like they purposely like zoomed up and got like a little bit blurry.
No, it is a one take shot.
It is
legitimately a one take shot.
Which is
wow.
Yeah.
Which for me, that to me reminded me like The Raid.
Yeah.
You know, where it's just like this seamless fighting, all that choreography done. Also the fact that he was getting hurt and he was still walking around guys. Other guys are like trying to get up and stuff. He's gotta walk over the dudes to go get the boy.
Well, and he's
in the way.
Not just hurt, but tired.
But
like
tired.
He's throwing the fight, and then he's like, he'll stop and wait,
and
get his bearings back.
Yeah,
and then he's like throwing haymakers.
He'll even have to take a hit just because he's too tired.
Yeah,
he like throws a haymaker and then basically falls over.
Right.
He's like, yeah, that's it. I'm done.
Yeah.
The other thing I've seen reference, of course, is the True Detective sequence.
Oh yeah, of course,
True Detective sequence, and. to have a Marvel show referenced in the same level as, you know, a movie that's that beloved,
yeah,
and a show that is that critically acclaimed, I am pleased to see just how well this was done.
I'm
still blown away that that was one shot.
I know, right? I mean,
and I'm reading an article right now in front of me.
That was the one. There was an article about it. That
Flash film, yeah.
Yeah, that they were talking about, like, because like I say, Christos Gage is a Facebook friend of mine, and he's one of the writers, and he said, I'm seeing a lot of people say, I can see where they made the edits. He's like, there are no edits. That was a one take scene.
Now, here's the other question.
Yeah.
Do you know if that was Charlie Cox in it?
I'm almost certain it wasn't. I feel like there's got to have been stunt doubles.
Yeah.
I mean, Charlie Cox
got someone with a good chin just like him, I guess.
He's in good shape. I mean, I'm sure they did some of his stunt work, but the level of stunt work here had to have been dedicated to stunt man.
I don't know. I haven't seen any behind the scenes where he actually did training. Because, like, I always think about Keanu Reeves.
Yeah.
In the first Matrix.
Yeah.
If they took all that time to train, like Keanu Reeves did, who actually could do all that shit by the time the Matrix hit... I think it's depending on how dedicated and I don't know Charlie Cox's background. I don't know if he was an athlete or something like that. To me, it wouldn't surprise me either way, you know, because I always think about like Jason Statham, who was like a gymnast. So when you see him do that stuff, that's really him. Or even Tom Cruise.
He was like a kickboxer or something.
Yeah, and even Tom Cruise, who, you know, still does most of his own stunts. So.
Yeah.
But either way, it was seamless. Charlie Cox and, let's see, who's the guy? Eldon Henson?
Foggy. Yeah.
Foggy, the dimensions of Foggy from like...
Well, yeah, let's do this. Let's go through the characters.
The key thing about Foggy, by the way, before we get into much deeper, is that Foggy is as important to this show as Daredevil. It's important to Daredevil. You've got to get Foggy right.
Well, okay,
and
so...
And do you believe they did?
They nailed
it. Okay, so what are the traits from the comic then to...
He's got to be Daredevil's best buddy. He's got to be a little bit schlubby.
Right.
But... ultimately a good guy, and he is the more practical of the two of them.
And he's the heart.
He's the heart, yeah.
And someone else was kind of discussing with me on Twitter and kind of raising a complaint that a lot of his... he's not that funny for him trying to make these jokes. And I kind of agree that I thought a lot of his lines, his humor, fell flat as far as actually getting a chuckle out of
it. But I thought that was part of the joke.
Yeah.
Because he's dry humor. And
he's lighthearted. I'm like, okay, as far as that's concerned, it's perfect, though.
Yeah.
I don't know. I never really even remember Foggy being all that funny so much as he just always... was a positive personality.
Foggy's particular brand of humor, especially in the current Mark Waid Daredevil, which, by the way, if anyone's looking for Daredevil comics, that is the one. It's great. Mm-hmm. It's a lighter take than the show, but it's a great take. But Foggy is always the guy who will tell Matt what he needs to hear, and usually in sort of a sarcastic way. So his humor is sort of poking fun at his best friend.
Yeah.
But he's not a guy making gags. He's not Spider-Man. He's not Deadpool. He's not making gags. He's just joking around. He's supposed to be sort of... charming in an inoffensive way.
He was a lovable everyman.
Yeah, yeah, he's a lovable everyman.
What I loved about it though is that even like the hot chick that's at the the hot blonde
Karen Page, played by Dan Brandon Wool.
Yeah, he was able to. Well, no. I'm not talking about the lawyer.
Christy. Oh, you're talking about his ex.
The fact that he's still being able to bag that. I'm like, that's cool. That's like a realistic guy.
Yeah.
Because he's schlubby, but he's still charming and still funny enough.
Got something working for him.
He's still got something going for him. And I like that play between... I like that play he always had where you knew he wasn't a total jackass.
Her name was Marcy, played by Amy Rutberg.
Yeah, correct. I really liked that. It made him like a real person, that he wasn't such a doofus, you know? And I those jokes that didn't hit, I don't know, just kind of, like, I know people like that. They'll just say bad jokes because they just want to, and they know it's bad, but they don't care, but because they're trying to make another point with it, you know?
I always thought that Eldon, whatever his name is. Eldon Henson.
Yeah.
I remember him from the Mighty Ducks movies.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, that's an ugly dude.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, like, casting for Foggy, I was like, that guy is perfect looking for Foggy.
And he was perfect.
And he's a little less ugly.
Well, what did you think of the hair? I think Foggy's hair was perfect.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got to be a little doofy. It's got to be a little showy. I mean, he's a lawyer. He's trying to make an impression.
So. Yeah. Oh, man, I loved his... his Shaggy from Scooby-Doo kind of look in college too.
Yeah, no, that was great.
It was like, I had a joint, and I was like, dude, you had a lot of joints.
What I think was important too was that not just that Foggy was kind of funny, and you know, he was sort of the everyman, but
right.
that in episode two, when he and Karen Page are at the bar,
yeah.
that whole pub crawl thing they go on is great.
Yeah.
And then when they're at the bar and he's like, well, there's this guy and he's this, and you know, you start seeing the Foggy's, he's got more to him than that. He's, you know, he's a smart guy.
He's in tune with the community.
Yeah. And that he knows how to sort of set her at ease and help her out. And then you get to the episode 10, which is Foggy versus Nelson versus Murdoch.
Yeah.
And he can play that sort of serious stuff too.
Yeah,
lit into him.
It's, I mean, I've said it already a million times, but he is the heart, and he's the epitome of what Daredevil, Matt Murdock, is fighting for.
Yeah,
and I think it's great to kind of show this is the ideal that he's trying to strive for. This type of person who it can also be selfless toward others.
So, I also thought that Karen Page is very important in the comics.
Yeah.
She is Daredevil's sort of main girl. She's mm-hmm. Mary Jane's to Spider-Man, basically.
Right,
she's
right.
one of the main, and I thought she was great.
I wasn't so sure initially.
Really?
But I think as it kind of went along, I really started liking her.
Yeah.
And then it kind of, I don't blame her. I thought that the storyline got a little bit tedious where right around like, episode like 8 through 10-ish, mm-hmm. uh-huh. right before the end kind of climax area,
right?
Where she's just kind of harping on this thing and no one's buying into it, and she became annoying, I guess.
Really? Well, I thought I didn't like it, it's not because of the actress or anything, but I actually think it's really good writing when she basically lied to Ben to get him up to the.
I loved that bit.
Yeah. That was good because I totally thought it was going to be like her parent was there. That was starting
to hurt. It totally pissed me off. And if I was like Ben, I would have been pissed off.
Yeah, he was right to be pissed.
But I was like, this is great though. This is what I want out of a TV show.
Well, she was the one who really was still pushing for this, and everybody else was sort of looking at it from different angles.
Right. But then there's still some stuff though.
Oh yeah.
Because somebody who was this episode 2 or 3? Oh no, it was when she signed a non-disclosure or something. No.
Yeah.
Was it that episode?
It was.
They mentioned her past. So I'm thinking,
they mentioned her past a couple times.
And yeah, I'm like, what's up with her past?
If you know the comics, well. There are some very important things in her past.
Okay, so
they're referencing some stuff that happens in later Daredevil.
Is that Frank Miller's stuff?
Yeah.
Okay. So it's unsavory.
Oh, yeah. seems like it.
They laid a lot of groundwork here, both with the Stick episode, because I thought they'd get back to that stuff with Stick and Black Sky and the guy he's talking to at the end and all that.
Season 2.
Okay, yeah. Season 2. I didn't get that at all.
That's because that's all nods for a future season,
right?
Because
it was some kid, and like, and he shot an. He said he shot the kid with an arrow, but you don't see it.
No,
you know. So I'm like, you know, what does that?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
It all felt very Golden Child, I thought it was really interesting them going into this, the mysticism of the Marvel Universe because that certainly lays the groundwork for Doctor Strange becoming another character.
What about Madame Gao?
She is ties into Iron Fist.
Okay, because she's got that whole mysticism.
I loved her, by the way.
Oh, she's great.
Her whole little cackling and everything.
Ching-Ho.
She was great.
She was great.
Yeah.
Also, as long as we're talking bad guys, I mean, before we even get to the main one, James Wesley. Yeah. Is an invented character.
Man.
No, he's in the comics.
Is he?
There's character Wesley.
I don't remember
in the
him.
Comics. I looked it up and he was the right hand man of.
I'm
of
so
the,
mad he's gone. I
he was
liked
great.
Him.
Toby Leonard Moore played him, and he was great because he brought that sort of sophistication and menace before you ever saw the Kingpin.
Right.
Did you guys not think that this guy looks just like Matthew Reeves from the
Americans?
Yes,
American? I did.
Yeah, a lot of that.
The whole time,
especially
with the glasses.
Yeah.
And his upper lip kind of whatever.
Well, I love the relationship he had with Kingpin, where the two of them were actually friends.
And I was hoping they'd go back. Like, when they went back to the Kingpin's, you know, his backstory, I was hoping they would tie that in somehow, why they're friends. But that's okay.
I loved also that we didn't see Wilson Fisk until third episode or the very end of the second one.
Yeah.
And that they didn't even say his name at first, that he was just like my employer and all that. I thought
they
introduced him perfectly.
We only really, I think, see Kingpin.
At the end.
At the very end, once he's in his prison fatigue.
I agree.
Because this is a very interesting take for D'Onofrio of Wilson Fisk, because he plays him as sort of anxious, neurotic, maybe a little bit delusional in the belief that
he's a damaged boy.
He is doing something good, but you know, maybe a little bit Machiavellian in his
methods. Of course, totally Machiavellian. And I felt bad for him after seeing. And listen, I love Dominic Lombazini. Is that how you pronounce
my
name?
Man Herc.
My Herc.
From The Wire.
I mean, I love him. I love his acting. I have a man crush on him. So when I saw him as his father, I was like, okay, this is going to be great. But then he went totally bad.
Yeah.
And I thought that, you know, the money he owed, the money, because he ran for that campaign, I thought the money he owed was going to get him killed. But I didn't see that coming.
Right.
With like.
Oh, really? I thought they showed.
Well, once he hit the mom.
Once they
then
showed
I saw
him
it.
In the mirror.
They showed him with the blood.
Kid,
I was pretty sure that was
the little
happened.
Kid with the blood.
Yeah,
I was like, he killed his parents.
Yeah,
I thought he was going to kill them both.
Really? I was pretty sure he was going to kill his dad.
Or I thought he was going to kill that kid who the dad was kicking.
I thought it was also possible that his dad was going to kill his mom and that was where all the blood had come from.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I was pretty sure that's where they were. But I thought they did a really good job on it. And I thought, the thing is, Wilson Fisk in the comics is a very sinister, powerful, dangerous guy.
Right.
But this vulnerability, the only thing that comes from the comics is that his wife Vanessa was always sort of his weak spot.
Mm-hmm. Like he was married to
Vanessa. He was married to Vanessa, but we did not see the courtship in the comics.
Oh, okay.
She just sort of becomes, she was sort of infirm from the start.
Okay, because I think like.
Sort of the queen pin.
Yeah,
well, she's not. In the comics, she was sort of ill and infirm. She was almost in a coma.
Oh.
And then
there's one.
Yes,
some
okay.
Comic line
originally, when she was introduced, it was during the Frank Miller stuff.
Okay.
Daredevil basically used Kingpin's wife to get him to stop doing something.
Okay.
He said, "Look, you can your wife is here, and you can either do what you want, and you're gonna lose her forever because she's not into the crime stuff, or you can give up on this and stay with your wife." And he chose Vanessa. And in Bendis's run, he made Vanessa more of a crime, like she was okay with it, and she was sort of taking revenge for her husband.
Yeah, see, I thought
this was more like that.
I thought that's where this was going to go, and I still think I think she's going to break him out of prison somehow.
It is definitely she has corrupt. He has corrupted her.
Well, it's funny because she just. I don't know, maybe from watching Justified and all that stuff.
Yeah.
When you see the women behind the men, and you know, like these women. Kind of basically down with them with what the guys are doing. That's why they do it.
Yeah,
and I love that. I love the courtship. I love the picture. I love the wall. The whole thing about him, his father says, "Sit at the wall, stare at it, and think of the kind of man you want." So he buys a painting like that. The jail. The last scene with the jail. He's looking at the wall. I love that.
Yeah.
Oh, show's great.
Islet Zurer played Vanessa, and she is also fantastic.
You know, honestly, she's not a bad looking woman.
She's the weakest spot for me, and not because I thought she was bad.
Uh-huh. Really,
I just didn't think she was as perfect as everybody else.
Ooh, I liked her.
I thought she was good. I just didn't think she was given as much to do.
I thought that she had just like the chemistry and how she kind of baited him along.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The twinkle in her eye of compassion and understanding. And then eventually love and support that she shows.
Yeah.
I thought they did such a great job.
Yeah.
And perhaps she didn't have a whole lot to work with. I agree.
Yeah.
With that.
Yeah.
But for what she did, I thought she handled it very well.
You're
and
right.
I can totally see her pulling the strings in season two while he's in jail.
I love all the lines they were talking back and forth. They're like, you know, a guy offered to buy every piece off a painting in there, and he was like, well, any woman who would take that isn't worth me, my time.
This one guy wore a white suit with a cravat.
An ascot.
It was like, yes, that's perfect, because he's totally going to do that.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know. I loved that part of it. I loved the other crime. I love the Russian brothers. I love the little background.
Oh, yeah.
Of the background of the Russian brothers in that jail getting out.
Man, they loved doing us the cringe-worthy stuff when they were taking this. But it made perfect sense. Like, oh, well, he got a perfectly good corpse here. Let's use the ribs as weapons.
It's like kind of like the Americans.
Yeah.
Where I see stuff that intuitively makes sense, but you never think of. And somebody actually says, hey, what would happen if I just take these ribs out? I was like, oh my God.
Yeah,
I've never seen this on TV. This is awesome.
Yeah.
And it works.
Also, they have Bob Gunton plays Leyland Owlsley.
From Scrubs.
Oh, he's from a lot of stuff.
From Scrubs.
He's from
I always think of him.
The funny thing is, Leyland Owlsley
is
one of Daredevil's major villains.
Really?
The Owl. Now, I'm guessing that his son is the Owl.
His son is also named Lee.
Yeah.
They mentioned that.
He mentioned
his son so many times that he looked a little too old to be the Owl.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I think it's perfect because, man, he was also
He was great. But did you guys? I mean, when everything went down with the champagne.
Yeah.
I totally thought he did it.
Well, that was my first guess, and then he played it well enough that I started thinking, wait a minute.
No, every time he was asking a question, I thought he was trying to oversell it.
I was starting to think that Wesley might have been the one who done it.
Me too.
That he was appearing to be as loyal, and then we were going to get this twist that he actually
Because he didn't drink it.
And
he grabbed it, but he didn't, and he was about to, but then he poured it.
No, he was the one who handed it to Vanessa.
Yeah, but it still was kind of like, I don't know, I thought he played it off really well. And then the whole thing, hey, should I be checked? I touched this. I love how annoying he was all the time.
He was really great. Yeah. And I love that at the end, he was all confident. He's like, you give me half your assets, I've got this guy. And Kingpin's like, nope, killing you.
Kingpin. Yeah.
Not only that, but getting shocked like until the taser died.
Yeah.
And still picking him up and throwing him down the elevator shaft.
D'Onofrio was amazing.
Oh, he was.
He had that physical power that you needed, but he didn't.
They made him seem big.
Of the Kingpin. The Kingpin in the comics is this big, giant, sumo-looking dude.
He's going to eat a lot in prison.
You can't actually do it.
No.
But they came really close and did... They captured Rob Liefeld style body.
He pulls that kind of... sensitive, crazy thing.
Yeah,
like he's been doing since Full Metal Jacket.
Yeah,
you know, was it Pyle, right?
Yeah,
and just that he gets that crazy look. He's a guy that just actually really freaks me out.
Yeah,
like, and he's always playing that kind of like even in Law and Order, criminal
SVU mind, or whatever.
No, the one about criminal intent. Well, he was always kind of like the freakish Hulk version of like Columbo.
Yeah.
And he'd always like scare the hell out of you. But I thought he was working so hard, like he actually had a heart attack and they told him not to work so much and stuff like that. So he's a really weird dude. But he was perfect for this.
And then when he'd go into violence, like when he cut the Russian's head off with the car door.
Ugh. Again,
when he went after the biggest turning point, cutting the head. Yeah,
it was like it went so violent. And I was like, okay, I have such a good picture now of who he is.
Yeah,
like the fact that it wasn't a business thing; it was him feeling embarrassed in front of his girlfriend he was trying to court.
But
that's what tipped it over the
scales
for him.
It didn't stop. You know, usually it stops and the body falls.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, and you never see the head. No, he took the head off and then it fell off.
It was so perfect that they had him slam it and then you stop it like, okay, he's done.
Yeah.
And then it's like, no more.
Get it off. It's almost off. Get up.
Pushing forward.
And then, and then Leland walks in. He's like, anybody want to talk about this? He's got the hose on the SUV there.
I thought that they did a lot of sort of gruesome stuff. The guy who didn't want to say his name and impaled his own head.
I didn't expect that.
I heard rumor that was supposed to be Speedball.
I don't think
so. Because his last name's Healy, and that's the same as Speedball.
No, Speedball's name is Baldwin.
There's two Speedballs.
Oh, no. Healy, the bad guy, is an evil juggler named...
Something Ball.
Pinball.
Pinball. Okay.
Because Jason Murphy was watching with me, and we looked it up, and those are some obscure villains.
Pinball, and he just wanted to throw some balls.
Yeah.
At the bowling alley.
That whole bowling alley scene.
Yeah.
That was episode 3?
It was early on.
It freaked me out. Like, okay.
They set him up as such an amazing fighter.
They're fighting all that stuff. When he stuck his arm in, and we've all bowled, and you know, you always think, if I get my arm stuck in that thing, and he broke his arm, and I'm like, oh my gosh.
And then they showed the bone.
Yes.
I mean, they did not hold back
on
the violence.
They didn't hold back on that, and then the bowling ball on the head, I'm surprised. I'm glad they didn't show that. It was.
Yeah. Also, Healy brings up another point in that they didn't really do mooks here. Like, they didn't have a bunch of thugs that Murdoch could just tear his way through. Like, everybody was
Russians
dangerous.
A little.
But even then, I mean, they were... The only reason he was so successful is because he turned the lights off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, everybody that he went up with, if some guy pulled a knife out on him, that was going to be a dangerous fight.
Yeah.
There was never a sense of... There was never kind of the Batman thing where he, like, just, you know, could take down dozens of guys. It was going to hurt him if he did that.
They had a couple scenes throughout the series where he has guns on him.
Yeah.
And... just something happens to happen that allows him enough time to throw a projectile and run, spin out of the way, and hide behind a car. And I was like,
I liked them playing up to the Billy Club. That's his big weapon, and I liked that he was basically throwing guns around and he eventually realized, oh, I need a weapon, and the stick gave him the sticks.
I mean, he got the sticks, and then he upgraded him to the locking. Yeah.
I was so happy at the collapsible Billy Club at the end,
but at the same time, I kind of wanted. I don't know, a little bit okay. more explanation of what it was rather than all of a sudden he's just fighting with
I don't yeah. care. Okay, now the thing with the suit.
Yeah.
Is that how it happens in the comics? Like, no. Who is that dude?
Okay, that dude is from the comics. Melvin Potter is a mentally damaged man who you saw, this is one of the Easter eggs, but you saw the saw blade on the table.
Yeah.
Like and when he's throwing the saw blades that he throws at him.
Yeah.
He was designing a saw blade. So that he has a armored suit. With spinning saw blades, and he called himself the Gladiator, and he was a super, he was a super villain.
Okay,
And he's like this big, powerful dude, and
and eventually he becomes a good guy.
And eventually becomes a good guy, but he's always been the tailor. That's his thing. He was a guy who designed costumes. The bulletproof cost the armored fabric thing that's invented for the TV show, but it's a good invention.
Yeah.
So, what do you guys think of the costume?
I thought it was okay.
I hated it.
Really?
I can't stand it.
Oh.
I think it looks terrible.
Really?
I don't like the color combination. I don't like how they formed the mask. All of it makes me go, man, I thought Ben Affleck's costume looked so much better.
You know, I don't disagree. Ben Affleck's costume is pretty much a traditional good Daredevil costume.
Uh-huh.
But it looks over-designed to me, but I don't think it looks bad. I think it's just, I would have liked a stronger design.
It reminds me of... what I really hated about the Amazing Spider-Man costume like this mesh kind of integrated with all this heavy shoulder pad stuff.
They wanted to look more realistic instead of...
And I feel like they could have just made it all red and not had such a heavy brow line thing for the mask. I would have been okay. But
I don't disagree.
I don't think it looks cool.
I don't dislike it as much as you do, but I was disappointed. That's one of my few disappointments was I thought they were building up so long
such
the costume.
A build up.
And I thought, okay, this better be great. And it was okay.
Yeah, as soon as I saw it, I was like, what?
We kept those last four or five episodes, we were like, is this when you get the costume? Is this when he gets the costume?
Exactly.
And then he goes to Melvin and we're like, okay, is this the fight with the costume? And he kept having the black costume. And we're like, where's the costume? And they're like, okay, it's gonna be the last 10 minutes, and it was.
Give us our goddamn costume.
I also, my other minor disappointment, when he jumps at the end, I was really hoping he was going to have the cable in his billy club, and I was kind of bummed they didn't do it.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, these are all things like, I wish it had been perfect.
Right.
Yeah. Well, a couple more characters I wanted to address.
Yeah.
Ben Urich.
Ben Urich was great.
Von D. Curtis Hall.
Man, and I love him as an actor.
Great.
It was colorblind casting, by the way, because traditionally he's an old white dude.
Yeah.
Oh,
but it was perfect. He perfectly embodied who Ben Urich should be.
But I didn't think they were going to kill him. I really didn't.
I didn't either, because he's a major character.
Okay.
That's a complaint I've seen from a lot of my friends who are comic fans are like, what are you doing killing off Ben Urich? And I think because he was such an because we expect him to be alive, because we expect all of that of him, I thought having him killed was very effective.
Okay.
Also, he's a big Spider-Man character. Like Spider-Man and Daredevil.
Yeah.
Mm. And they, at the time of when they started filming this, I don't think they had Spider-Man.
No, but he became... Kingpin was a Spider-Man villain originally, too.
Right. Yeah, he was.
Became so much Daredevil guys that I think they basically jumped properties.
Yeah. Mm. It was very disappointing that they killed him off.
Yeah.
Because he played it so well.
Yeah.
I think that he was able to have this heavy burden on his shoulders that he carried very effectively. I don't remember any of that with his wife kind of storyline.
No, he had a wife, but they never saw her. You never really saw her.
Yeah.
She was always sort of an off. And he also, in the comics, he has a kid who becomes the Green Goblin. So they specifically mentioned he doesn't have kids.
Oh, okay.
Ah.
I didn't have time to be disappointed because I was so shocked they did it.
Right.
And so my respect for the balls of doing that, of killing off a character, and the shock of a character I thought was safe getting killed, overwhelmed my disappointment that they killed off one of the best supporting characters.
I will say I totally thought when he left the Gazette or whatever he was at, he was going to go to the Bugle.
Yeah.
I thought, I'm going to take my business over to the Bugle.
Every time. Yeah.
And we'd see a cameo of like Robbie at least. J. Jonah.
And the one funny thing I always thought is like, how come every time he was walking to his car, it was always dark and he was always by himself? It's like, you would think, don't you leave during the day sometimes?
man, he's a reporter. He's always there.
He's always there. And then somebody's behind him. He always drops his keys. It's always raining. I always thought that was kind of funny.
They did a lot of foreshadowing and a lot of like baits and switch, I guess, with the audience.
Yeah.
Like there's a couple times where I totally looked like, what's her name?
Electra?
Karen Page was going to get Page, killed, right. As I'm seeing.
They faked that
and
out.
And they were just messing with us.
Also, like, oh, nice. We haven't talked about Rosario Dawson's character much.
No.
Well, I don't like... Why did she disappear in the second like half of the episode? I didn't like
because
that.
Because she got pissed at him.
Oh,
she remember that she,
that's right.
She
that's
said,
right.
she's
that's
like,
right.
I can't
right.
do this and left.
You're right, you're
and
right.
And then then Foggy called her when he was right. in dire, dire straits. Right.
But we didn't see her that episode either, which seemed like a... A blatant omission.
No, we didn't.
She wasn't in the versus him versus whatever.
No, we saw her in the next episode.
Right after.
Yeah. But I think that's because they wanted to focus just on Foggy.
I guess
and
that
Matt.
Makes sense.
And you don't want to distract from that.
For some reason, I sort of thought that she wasn't there because she was filming something else.
Mm-hmm. My guess is that Rosario Dawson's character is going to be one of the linkages between the other shows. Because Claire Temple, Rosario Dawson's character, is the in the comics, is the ex-wife of Bill Foster, a.k.a. Black Goliath.
Wow, okay.
And a love interest of Luke Cage.
Okay.
That is a deep cut.
I thought she was married to Luke Cage at one point.
No, she was married to Bill Foster.
Okay.
She dated Luke Cage.
And I think Luke Cage.
She probably will date
series.
Luke Cage, I'm guessing. Mm-hmm. But the interesting thing is they're mixing her up with a character named Night Nurse, who's sort of the medic to the superheroes. This is the thing that Bendis introduced.
Oh.
She's an old soap opera character that Bendis repurposed as a Daredevil supporting cast.
Cool.
And that's a different character, but it's clear that she's filling that role.
So okay, let me go big picture. Now,
they've
got four more characters they're rolling out Netflix.
Three. Defenders.
And then Defenders. Oh,
so next is AKA Jessica Jones. And the reason they're doing this is very important because Jessica Jones is a show that is going to probably guest star both Luke Cage and Daredevil if it's anything like the comics.
Okay.
So they had to have Daredevil established.
Right.
Well, if not Daredevil, Matt Murdock at any rate.
Right.
And then Luke Cage is next because Luke Cage will spin right out of all that.
Right.
And then Iron Fist will be last, which makes sense because Iron Fist basically becomes Luke Cage's partner.
Okay.
And then that leads into the Defenders, which is the group of all of them.
Okay.
Which really, in the comics, the Defenders is Doctor Strange, Hulk, Namor, and Silver Surfer.
Mm-hmm.
But, a lot of us are kind of wishing they'd use the Heroes for Hire name, which is what Luke Cage and Power Man always called themselves.
Right.
Or Power Man and Iron Fist, rather. And but they want to have a brand, and it's harder to brand Heroes for Hire than it is to brand Defenders. I understand where they're doing it.
One person we didn't actually address.
Yep,
Matt Murdock, Charlie Cox.
Oh, Charlie Cox.
What do we think of him?
He
as
was
Daredevil?
Great.
I thought he was great. I liked him a lot. I mean, he was. I'd like to. His accent was fine.
No kidding. His accent was really good.
I caught.
He's an Irish guy.
I caught it slip a couple times.
Yeah.
I caught it slipping a couple times where I was like a little bit of that lilt got in there, but mostly he nailed it. He plays Matt's Catholicism really well. He plays his horn dog nature really well.
Yeah.
Because as Foggy states in one of his Foggy's front-running gags, you're a blind man who always knows where the hottest woman in the room is.
A little creepy in that first episode where Karen Page takes off her shirt in front of him and he's just kind of like standing there.
Well,
and we know he totally can see her.
No, it's just it's radar sense. He can't
see
her
in his
boobs.
Heat vision.
What? I mean,
he can heat vision boob her.
But I guess I didn't.
It's a world on fire, Randy.
Yep. I guess I didn't expect that much range from him. I mean, I always thought he was good, but
I liked him on Boardwalk Empire.
Well, he was great as in Boardwalk Empire. He's always done like a lot of English people or Scottish or Irish. So you always think of him kind of like in those like period piece things. But the fact that he's playing contemporary, playing American, has got all the attitudes, got the physicality of it too. I don't know if he got in shape for it, but he looks good.
Yeah, he's very ripped.
So this is interesting. Charlie Cox was Joe Quesada, Marvel's chief creative officer in 2012. I had the idea of casting him.
Mm-hmm.
And Cox was raised Catholic.
Right.
He says he found that helpful. And he read the first two scripts and told his agent, he's like, look, I'll do anything they want me. This is two of the best scripts I've ever read, but I really want to be Matt Murdock.
Oh, good.
So
wow.
Good. So he was in.
It all worked out.
And I thought he did a great job. I thought he really sold, Matt as sort of this, Matt could be lighthearted, but he lived in sort of a dark place.
Do you think that we got to see much of lighthearted or even charming Matt Murdock?
I think we did.
I mean, I thought it was much more apparent, of course, than Foggy, but
yeah.
I don't know. It just seemed what we were presented with, and it's probably just all mainly because of the plot.
Yeah.
But even out when he was playing Matt Murdock and not Daredevil, It's just like everything is so heavy.
Some of the time that he and Foggy and Karen were doing stuff,
really beat up.
Yeah. Some of the time that he and Foggy and Karen spent together, I thought was sort of light stuff, and also very important in I think the third episode when he does the speech to the jury.
Yeah,
you have to show that Matt Murdock is good at being a lawyer.
Yeah.
That was Healy, right? He's defending Healy in a way and not defending him at the same time.
Right.
You have to be able to see that he's good in court. So
and they
even
only do it once.
We only did it once, but that was a really important scene.
Yeah.
And that they were just competent lawyers because they, even when you didn't see them in court, they were building the case. They knew like case law or whatever. And they actually show them working, researching stuff, which I thought was really cool. And also, I just love in that Murdock versus Nelson. That he's basically saying, man, you stand for the law and you're doing all this other shit. I mean, this is what we fought for. You're talking about doing a righteous thing and you're doing all this other stuff that really laid the guilt on him. And then even when he's talking to the priest, and the priest was hilarious. Right. I love that. Oh, my God.
The priest.
He is.
The priest is played by
Peter McRobbie.
Yeah.
Who's that guy. He's in everything. He's actually one of the main stage judges in like Law and Order. So
there's also a Marvel Easter egg related
to him
too.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So I've loved him since the 90s and I actually and he was the father in the gay cowboy movie. He was
Brokeback Mountain.
Yeah, he was the father. That was when he went to go visit him.
Oh, you know, we haven't talked much about the fight. We talked a little about the fight scenes. One of the things I really liked about their Daredevil is his fighting style. He mixed in the ninja stuff and the flips and kicks,
right?
But he was a boxer.
Well, yeah.
And I like that they mixed, because that's important to Daredevil. He's got to be more of a boxer guy.
Well, being able to take a hit.
That's his power, taking hits.
He could take a hit and he can get up, like his dad.
Yeah.
Which was great, you know? So.
Okay, there's so many Easter eggs.
Who's his dad?
His dad.
He looks so familiar.
His dad was played by, I have it right here, John Patrick Hayden, who I don't know who that is. I don't have an IMDb.
John Patrick Hayden? Let me see if I can find.
Oh, but Scott Glenn as Stick was perfect.
Oh, yeah.
Stick is really important, and Scott Glenn was perfect casting for him. Because we were watching with a friend of mine who had never read much Daredevil. He's read the Wade stuff, but he hasn't read the older stuff. And so he's never heard of Stick. And he's like, who's Stick? And we're like, think of him as an asshole Yoda.
Yeah.
Right. And that's pretty much what he played.
And I heard he's actually nicer here than he is in the comics.
Yeah. A little bit, yeah. Yeah.
That had a very Kill Bill thing with
him. Yeah.
Which I thought was actually kind of cool.
Well, because he is in that vein. He's the traditional blind monk kind of character. Yeah.
You know who I didn't really care for?
Who's that?
Who was the old lady that was getting kicked out of her building?
Oh, yeah. I've seen a couple of my friends say that her accent was terrible.
I don't know. She was just so corny. She was a big cornball, and they're all like, we love her. She's great.
That was Judith Delgado as Elena Cardenas. You know, she was more of a symbol than a character.
Yeah.
She wasn't, she seemed goofy.
But I don't know if that's the actress. I think that's the writing. I think it was the writing. They only had so much stuff
I totally think that was the actress. Yeah. I think a different actress could have brought alive that actual character delivering those lines and actually made me care for her more.
I actually thought she was good. I liked her and I cared about her and I cared when they killed her. They did enough work with me that I liked that character.
Okay.
So
you guys want to talk about some of the Easter eggs that are sprinkled out?
Yeah, I was looking to see if there's anything else we want to cover before. Oh, real quick, the way that there's radar sense.
Yeah.
They only touched on it like once or twice.
Right.
And, you know, I was kind of expecting seeing some different visuals like you've seen in the comics.
Yeah,
like
me too.
Emanating lines or something.
Right, right. But instead they did it very subtly, and I liked the way they did it.
And I like that they don't just like, it's not just the five senses. There's so many senses that we actually have.
Yeah.
And he hits on all these, like this balance and perception.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. And he's talking about all these different things, and that's why he's so good.
Before we jump to Easter eggs, I'm curious. Do you guys have a favorite episode or a favorite couple episodes that you remember?
The Kingpin. I like the Kingpin. Is that episode 9?
The Speak
Kingpin
of the Devil.
Backstory.
Which, by the way, was written by Christos Gage and his wife, Ruth Fletcher Gage.
I'm just not kissing your ass, but it was great. give us an interview. That'd be great, too, but it was really good.
Christos is a guy, we go back a ways. I reviewed some of his early comics, and he's a great guy. He's a Facebook friend. So I'm very happy to see, and he's a really good comics writer, and I'm glad to see him kind of getting this gig and doing one of the better episodes of the series, to be honest.
Let me see.
The first two were written by Drew Goddard,
Into the,
and yeah. I think you could definitely tell that that had a level of craft. I thought was really spectacular.
Well,
especially that second episode.
Well, Cutman was just that last scene.
Yeah,
I mean
yeah.
that was amazing. Let's see. I'm trying. Now, see, they're all kind of.
I liked the one with his father. I guess that was the second one.
Yeah, that's Cutman.
Like
yeah.
how that really played up. What he's going through personally and how that tied into his flashback.
And I also love the Stick episode.
Stick was good.
Which, by the way, was written by Douglas Petrie, who's an old school Buffy and Angel guy.
It's also just so surprising that the Stick storyline worked so well.
Yeah.
Well, it makes sense.
I mean, I don't know. I think that Marvel so far has thrived on their cinematic universe being a lot more based in the real world.
A little more grounded, yeah.
Yeah, a little more grounded. That's why they kick things off with Iron Man.
It's science, not magic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
And Thor was going to be one of their big stretches. And then kind of entering this this mysticism that I think Stick is just naturally going to bring out.
Right.
They only touch on it a little, though.
But they're dipping their toe in that water before they get into it fully with Doctor Strange.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's good.
And I thought that was a great episode. And also, episode 10, Nelson versus Murdoch.
That was great.
I thought it was a fantastic episode.
Yeah. Two actors
My two weaker episodes are the one where it's Condemned, episode 6.
Yeah.
The one where he's in the bombed out building with the Russian.
Oh, and it just kind of drags on.
I thought it dragged a little bit. I liked it. Don't get me wrong. I still liked it, but I thought it was a weaker episode.
I loved it, actually, because I just loved I loved this the physicality and how they're breaking down and how the Russian keeps coming back to life somehow.
Yeah.
And then it's them caught and how he was. I had no idea how he was going to get out.
And I thought the pacing on the final episode, the 13th episode, was a little off.
It was a little off because I don't know.
I felt like once they brought the Kingpin in, I felt like, okay, that's the ending. And then they kept going.
But I
also, maybe a little bit anticlimactic.
Yeah, that's kind of what it was.
The fact that we've had these bigger spectacles, buildings blowing up across the city and things falling apart like that.
I did kind of wonder, okay, if the Kingpin had this army like that, why would he need everybody else? You know what I mean? But he's got this army of mercenaries, which was very much like Philip Seymour Hoffman. Mission Impossible 3 when he got out, which I actually really enjoyed. Yeah. But it's like, wait a second, he's got all these armed guards, he's got all the
he's
cops.
He's going to take this one truck. So
it was a big ship.
How come he needed the Russians and everybody else? If he can do everything himself.
That's the thing. He was getting rid of everybody because he was building up his organization.
Right.
But the one thing I did really like in that, though, was they're sitting in that truck and they got the two cops and they're in there with the Kingpin.
Yeah.
And I was saying to the guys, I'm like, you know, they do this a lot where like the bad guy's in there with a couple cops and there's guys outside and they say, come out, you know. And I'm like, I've always thought, you know, you're in there with the guy. They're going to kill you anyway. Why don't you at least put a bullet in the guy who kill them so it's like a Pyrrhic victory for them.
Right.
And then right as I said that, he's like, the guy makes that threat and the other guy kills him. And I'm like, oh, that's why. I'm like, that's pretty great that they had a guy on the inside.
Yeah.
I thought that was really, they addressed a question I've always had about that situation.
Right.
And I thought that was really, I thought it was really cool. So.
Yeah. It was, no, it's.
I mean, even the episodes I thought were weaker were good episodes.
It's nitpicking.
Yeah, it's nitpicking.
But it's so, so good.
All right.
Shocked how good this was.
Let's do Easter eggs.
Let's do some Easter eggs.
Okay.
So, first one I wanted to point out, and this wasn't actually in the show so much as, like, there was an image before the, when they're filming, I guess, the episode. Huh. But the accident where he gets blinded.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The vehicle that actually blinds him is from the Rand Corporation, or at least that's what it said on the truck.
Yeah.
Yes.
They cut it out of the episode, which I'm thinking means that they're going to try and reintroduce that in Iron Fist.
Right.
But Rand is Danny Rand, Iron Fist.
Okay,
he's the inheritor of that corporation.
Okay, well, that was funny because was it your Facebook? Somebody's Facebook.
I posted onto Jason's.
Yeah, and somebody was like, "Ann Rand Paul."
That was Johnny.
And I was like, "Yeah." I was like, "I don't think it was that." But
there's also across the hall from Nelson Murdoch is Atlas, which is both the original Marvel company name and also became. They did a book called Agents of Atlas that was like sort of pulp heroes. So it's sort of a nod back to that too.
And okay, now this is. Is this the first one without Stan Lee in it?
Stan Lee's in there somewhere.
Stan Lee is.
There. He usually plays some kind of. Yeah. I didn't see him at all.
When the crooked cop goes into the police station to turn himself in.
That wasn't Stan Lee.
There's a picture of Stan Lee on the wall.
Okay, yeah. Okay.
That's a, he's like employee of the month or something.
Oh,
like that.
Okay.
Or police officer.
It's a real small one this time.
I gotta watch. Yeah. I gotta go back and look at that.
There's also they mentioned Van Lunt. Cornelius Van Lunt, mm-hmm. who is, I just want to talk about deep dive. He is a member of the criminal Zodiac.
And the Zodiac is part of the big wheel, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the wheel is always turning, which is what Gal ends up saying.
Yeah.
And so she's talking about the cyclical nature of time, or is she talking about that?
Gal mentions that he says going back to China, and she says much further than that.
So, right.
So Gao is from Kunlun.
Is it Kunlun or the Steel Serpent bad one?
One of the other mortal cities, because Steel Serpent, which they call the heroine, is one of the bad guys in Iron Fist.
So that little logo
that
they were stamping on the drugs.
That's the logo from him. From him.
That's cool.
Another one, they're talking, they get that printer at the auction.
Yep.
Yeah.
And Foggy says, yeah, it'd be nice to that printer. Or the machines will take over someday.
Yeah.
Age of Ultron.
Okay.
That's
okay.
Like the machines are all taking over the planet. Right. Some other ones. Oh, we were talking about, what's that dude's name? The Guardian, or the Gladiator guy.
Yeah, Melvin Potter.
Melvin Potter.
Yep.
You look in his shop, and in addition to him making the arm, there is stilts of Stiltman.
Oh, I didn't see the stilts.
In the background.
That's awesome.
He's got some metal.
There's also a poster in his shop that is a Gladiator movie poster.
Yeah. I mean, this is just layered with, like, there's a lot of these characters that are some of the characters you end up seeing later, or they're kind of tie-ins. Like, you're talking about Father Lantern.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. He is a character from Cloak and Dagger.
Wait, and I thought he was also in The Runaways.
Wow. Cloak and Dagger first, Runaways later. Yeah.
Okay.
Wow, yeah. This is deep. That's good. But see, that's, to me, when you've got properties like this, and you've got the tie-ins, I wish more shows would do this, even outside like Marvel Universe, even if they mention like DC stuff or like any other show that mentions another show that's going on in the same universe.
Yeah.
I love shit like that. It's like, you know, seeing actors playing one group of characters and putting them in another group where they're kind of different, but you always look at them as like they're the characters you're familiar with them with. I love stuff like this.
Well, I would love if in season two or at some point we see Black Widow, because Daredevil and Black Widow have a history in the comics,
right?
And it's very different because Daredevil's not, you know, Black Widow is S.H.I.E.L.D. and not, you know, it's not the same relationship she had, but they were lovers for a while in the comics.
So
I guess we're gonna see a lot of the Hand.
Yes,
because.
Oh. The Hand, yeah.
The one guy, Nobu.
Nobu. He was the Hand.
He's wearing the red outfit. He's one of the Hand characters, or maybe the leader?
I think he was just one of the operatives. I don't think he was one of the big leaders.
Okay, so...
Oh, and the guy that Stick reports to at the end.
Yeah.
That's a guy named Stone.
Okay.
And they are the Chaste, and they're sort of the anti-Hand
operatives.
Do you
know what the dark sky is? Black sky or whatever?
No, I don't.
No one seems to know what this is.
I think Black Sky is original. I think it's a new thing.
Oh.
So there was also a nod to Elektra when they're on campus.
Yes.
Foggy mentions, oh, what about that Greek girl you used to date?
Yeah.
So we got a little bit of a...
And Elektra, that is a thing that happens in college Daredevil in the comics, so that is important.
So how are they going to tie this in? Well, how does it tie in at all with Arrow and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
Not Arrow.
Arrow's DC.
Okay, sorry. Shows you.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., there's a company, Roxxon,
was
mentioned here.
Yeah.
And...
Roxxon is Marvel's Exxon. They're the deviously evil Exxon of the Marvel Universe.
This has also been present in Agent Carter in the 40s. So it was one of the evil corporations there. And it was in Iron Man, one of the Iron Man movies. Another tie-in to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is that the orphanage that Matt Murdock's at is St. Agnes, and that's the same orphanage that Sky is at.
Okay.
Oh, huh. It's nice.
But I mean, how are they gonna? I'm curious how they're gonna tie all this in because of like the grittiness of this show of Daredevil just isn't there. It's
They're not gonna.
Yeah, because
and the quality is not there.
Yeah,
I mean, this was
possible.
$78 million I think they spent on this.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is a network project. It's cheaper and it's serving a different master. It is right. It is not. It's not so much meant to be a standalone as it is connective tissue between the movies.
Right.
They're treating it that way too. Mm-hmm. And while they could have done a Shield that was as good as Daredevil, it just doesn't seem to be what they're aiming for. They're aiming for a different kind of show. So I don't think we'll see much. I mean, crossover between these.
Okay.
Another one. The battle. Jack.
Battling Jack Murdock. Yeah. Yes. That's the most direct crossover.
He fights against Crusher Creel.
Oh. Okay.
Who's AKA the
who we've seen as the Absorbing Man in Shield.
Absorbing Man in Shield.
Okay. Yeah.
There was also a poster on the back wall that had Barton in there, which people were like, is this Clint Barton or maybe his father or something?
Yeah.
And what was this other one? There was this really this other interesting one that I was going to bring up. You can go to this website, Den of Geek or Comic Alliance. They have a whole big list of a bunch of these. Oh, the one other one I did want to bring up.
Okay.
The sniper that starts picking people off in the rooftop.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
There's a screenshot of the bag that he carries up with him, and there is a deck of cards with a ace of clubs hanging out of it.
Okay, so that maybe was a nod to Bullseye.
Nod to Bullseye.
We wondered about that. We weren't watching it.
And people are like, well, but he missed. But he was never actually aiming for the reporter guy.
No, he was aiming for the cop.
Yeah, who messed up and left his phone.
Yeah.
But he didn't kill him right away.
Yeah.
So maybe he kind of missed. But they did spin right then.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know. And if it's still Origin, he's got some time to brush up on his accuracy. Yep. Also, very cool. So we had a couple of questions I wanted to get to before we wrap this up.
Okay.
People asked us over on Facebook a few things. First one comes from Kian Ibanez. Sorry if I butchered that. Maybe Ibanez.
Mm-hmm.
He says, what do you think Netflix's phase two of The Defenders should be? Punisher versus Daredevil, Blade and Moon Knight, or go total left field and do Son of Satan or even Goliath?
Well, here's the thing. Phase two has to include season two of Daredevil.
Mm-hmm.
They're clearly set up for season two. And I don't think they're going to keep... I mean, I assume they're still going to do like four more shows, right? Not like... Right. Not they're going to expand to eight.
I wouldn't necessarily think they were going to bring in more people, but they do have Punisher,
and
the guy who Stephen DeKnight said he would love to do Punisher.
They should absolutely do Punisher because Punisher would work better as a TV show, and just like this kind of, it would be perfect.
Yeah, now
and
that
Punisher
we've seen
and Daredevil
what they can do
played off each other in the comics. Moon Knight would be a great addition. I think that'd be really cool. And I'm trying. There was some other stuff that we talked about when we were watching this, like
Blade.
Who else? Blade I can see, but Blade's like more supernatural than Street, and so it'd almost be a different type of thing.
Yeah.
I could see it. It could fit. If you were going to do that, you want to do like Blade and Ghost Rider and some of those, on TV.
The block that Nobu wanted, that whole city block?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Shadowland?
That's what people were saying, but we're hoping, because Shadowland was not great in the comics.
Mm.
But that doesn't mean it's not a good concept. You could do better in the cinematic.
Yeah.
That's one thing I did want to mention, that the show, just like the movies have done, while this is influenced by the comics, this is a completely original story. Like if someone comes in and says, hey, I really love the Daredevil show, what comic should I read? I can point them to a few.
There's a lot of Miller influence, though.
There's influence, but none of the events that happen in this show are really in the comics.
Okay, yeah, true.
So, I mean, they're doing... Winter Soldier did this, too. Winter Soldier is very true to the feel of the comic, but you can read the comic and not be spoiled on it because it's a completely different story.
Okay.
Same thing with, like, Walking Dead, that's... there. I like this, the idea of take the feel of it, take influences, maybe do story moments.
Take Guardians of the Galaxy, for example, too.
But make your own story, because... different stories work in comics than work in shows, than work in movies. And I think that's one of the things they did here.
I think, wasn't there a while ago we were talking about trying to find the comic writer or the TV writer or the movie script get person or whatever that can get those fields and cross those fields over that, where there isn't one person who could do all of it.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like they've been able to really find this show seems to be able to find that balance with people who wrote comics that wrote episodes that really had that feel there.
Yeah.
Television just lends itself better, I think, to the Marvel characters overall.
I disagree. I think that, I don't think Avengers would work on TV. I don't even know that Cap would work on TV.
Avengers is a coming together of all the individual storylines, but I think these are all born out of ongoing comic series.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
And and being able to tell long form narratives, yeah. I think you can explore characters so much better than you can in just these one shot movies where it becomes a little bit predictable what yeah. you have to hit. You have to have this encounter, you have to have the build up, and yeah. then you have to have the big showdown at the mm-hmm. end.
Well, that's the big thing. You look at the Daredevil movie, and they had Elektra and Kingpin and Bullseye and right. his dad and his origin, and everything gets packed into 2 hours.
Yeah.
It right. doesn't work. What I would love to see that's never going to happen is TV shows for the, you know, develop it and do all that, mm-hmm. and then do big, the big movies. Movies, event movies. Like Daredevil Born Again could be a movie. Like
right.
the big Daredevil story could be a movie.
You know, it seems like the only property that ever did that worked really cool mm-hmm. was Transformers. They had the show, then they had the yeah. big event movie, and they came back to the show
yeah.
from the movie.
Yeah.
Which I thought, I always wondered, why doesn't anybody else do that?
Firefly season two, man.
Okay. Yeah,
I'm trying to think. The other thing yeah. that I think, that I want to mention one other show that I think that would be it. There's a pair of female characters in Power Man and Iron Fist, the Daughters of the Dragon, Misty Knight and Colleen Wing. Mm-hmm. Colleen Wing's a samurai. She's an American woman who's samurai training. Misty Knight is their Foxy Brown. She's a black police detective mm-hmm. with a bionic oh. right arm.
Are you kidding me? I'm all over that.
She is Iron Fist's longtime love interest. And they become the Daughters of the Dragon. They become sort of a private eye team. And they were always sort of friendly with the Heroes for Hire. So for season two, I would love a Daughters of the Dragon show.
I mean, somebody's got to say, hey, okay, imagine Kill Bill
yeah.
with... iRobot, like Will Smith, iRobot. You know, he had that bionic arm in there.
Yeah.
Imagine that. How awesome would that be?
Yeah,
and like,
I think
it has a Hancock feel too at the same time.
I think Punisher is a slam dunk. You got to do Punisher at this point.
Yeah,
sure.
I think Moon Knight would make a lot of sense. And I'm sure there's others I'm forgetting. I honestly would love to see, now they've got the rights to Spider-Man drop in on Daredevil, because Spider-Man and Daredevil have a relationship. They have a friendship.
Yeah.
And I really want to see that now.
It'll be also interesting because they've confirmed that the Spider-Man they're doing is the 15-year-old kid
yeah.
version mm-hmm. of Peter
yeah.
Parker.
Yeah.
So he's going to be much younger
yeah.
and just mm-hmm. coming in and yeah. just this annoying, talkative, but very powerful superhero.
Yeah. Yeah. yeah.
And then, okay, and this is probably a really dumb question, because I don't know. So this universe never crosses over into the X-Men universe?
Well, it can't because Fox owns it.
Oh, yeah, they're not gonna.
In the comics, right. it is all apart. And
okay.
So, yeah, that's, I mean...
And it's also not gonna because they're making money.
Yeah. but X-Men, the X-Men and Avengers, they've done some big Avengers versus X-Men stuff the last few years. Wolverine is a member of the Avengers in the right. current comics.
Well, because it was weird because I watched, you know, I kind of split up Daredevil between 2 days. And,
yeah.
And HBO, they're premiering Days of Future, Days
right.
of Future Past. So I was watching, I was like, this is like the best television I've watched.
Yeah.
Entertained
right.
for like 14 hours of
yeah.
just ass-kicking stuff.
Yeah.
I was like, man, why don't they, you know, it would be nice to see this all together somehow, you know, but
yeah,
whatever.
No, but
good.
We could see Daredevil guest on an Avengers or something
yeah.
like that, or, you know, we could see any of that kind of stuff. So.
I'm sure with the reception this has had,
yeah.
we're going to see him cross
well,
over somewhere.
Yeah. I tweeted this out, and I do believe this. It's like, okay, AMC, they had Mad Men, they had Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
And I said, Netflix, you've got House of Cards.
Yeah.
And that's kind of, and I guess...
they have Orange is the New Black.
Orange is the New Black. Mm. So I thought this Daredevil was going to be like their Walking Dead. It just kind of
yeah.
gets... It's going to
yeah.
set... It's setting the bar
yeah.
for like genre stuff that everybody else is going to be looking to. It's going to pull a lot of people in that were kind of
yeah.
there, but maybe just, I think it's going to put them up on another
yeah,
level.
Totally.
All I know
yeah.
is we were all ready for AKA Jessica Jones to start like right after Daredevil
yeah.
finished.
Yeah.
It's going to be a long wait for some more of this because, man, the bar has been set really high.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let us know what you guys think, audience, because obviously we're in love with this.
Yeah, this is mm-hmm. great.
Please put your comments in below the show. Share this around with people.
Yeah.
Let us know. And, you know, as always, you can like us on Facebook and on Twitter. You guys can give us those iTunes shout outs. And we're going to have another episode this week because we have other stuff to talk about.
It's a big week.
We really wanted to do a dedicated one to the entire season here.
Yes.
So stay tuned, folks. Two dudes out.